This spoiler-filled podcast is recorded live, unscripted, and intended for those over 18. Now prepare your ears for the audio stimulation they've been waiting for all day as we step into
the spoiler room.
And here we are live on a spoiler room. Yes, I know we just had one a few days ago, but I just saw a film that was highly anticipated on my list, and it did not disappoint, and I just had to talk about it. And I'm talking about The Witch. And I've got a couple of crew members with me tonight to help discuss about this very interesting horror film. First off, we have the lovely Andrew Shearer returning to the spoiler room. Hello, Andrew. I'm doing well, thank you. That was an excellent cackle. So we're gonna get Witch Andrew all night, huh?
Yeah, man. Witch is witch.
And next to Andrew is Mr. Paul Salzar returning with us once again. Hello, Paul. How are you?
Hello. I'm actually tempted to be Glenda in this.
I'll be Hansel from Hansel.
Hansel.
Tonight, yes, we are talking about The Witch. If you have not paid attention at all, fans out there, it is an indie film that got a lot of buzz at Sundance. You saw the trailer online, and man, was that trailer creepy. And that film is getting wide release, though it's not at a huge amount of theaters. I drove a half an hour to see this film, and I will tell you, it did not disappoint. But it does seem to have disappointed a number of people. So let's just get reactions from our fine guests here tonight. First off, we'll go with you, Andrew. You got to see this a while ago, and what was your impression with this? Was it overhyped? Is it not scary? I mean, we've seen that criticism already from a number of people. What do you think about that?
Well, it's not a movie for mass consumption. You know, mm-hmm. It's definitely an arty movie. Definitely got more going on than what would be considered your mainstream horror. Definitely very far left of the center line of what's considered, you know, scary and fun. A night out at the movies with your buddies and or, you know, your girlfriend grabbing your hand or whatever. That's not what The Witch is. And I think, you know, people's expectations as far as what is scary, it's got a little bit more in mind than that. Not that it isn't scary, but it scares in a way that people are definitely not necessarily now wired to be scared. And therein lies the problem, I think.
Agreed. Excellent point on that. It is not, especially considering the wide release films that have come out that have been in the horror genre in the last few years, this one is definitely from the norm, even more so than what It Follows was. Paul, this one's in your wheelhouse, definitely, I would say. How'd you feel about The Witch? Overhyped?
No, I definitely agree with Andrew. It's definitely not an escapist type of movie. It's a different type of horror, for sure. I thought it was meaningful and powerful. I actually sat there and I was thinking in the movie, which is something that I don't usually get to do in a horror movie because I'm usually laughing at it. And this one didn't make me laugh.
It does not make you laugh. It's kind of creepy from the get-go, from when we see this family. It's set in the 1630s, for everyone who may not have looked it up, set in New England, and we have a family who basically leaves, as they say, the plantation because of their beliefs not jiving with the local village. So they go on a homestead, a small plot of land next to a very creepy woods, and suddenly forces of witchcraft, black magic, and possession seem to be affecting the family due to a witch, especially when the youngest of the family goes disappearing from the family. We see how that kind of tears them apart and wonder whether or not they're cursed by the witch or they're just cursed by being humans. And I love this film right away going into it, namely because you have to pay attention to the dialogue, don't you, Paul?
Yes. There is a bit of a heavy accent, I'll warn anybody. But once you start to listen to it, you do really start to pick up and you start to understand it. And yes, it's definitely, like you said, a dialogue driven. It's, there's little clues in what they're saying and how they're saying it also is important, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely how they're saying things, their inflection and their terms, or not slang, but I guess they're, use of terms for describing things I found interesting, but it felt authentic, really. It felt like they did some research and tried to really capture that authentic colonial dialect. Andrew, did you feel like it was pretty authentic compared to some other films that have been set during a similar time?
Well, yeah, I mean, they nailed it. It's the guy that made this movie, his background is in theater. It's his first movie, but it's not his first, you know, dramatic foray. And he researched the movie for 4 solid years, the script rather, when he was in the writing stages, to make it as authentic as possible. And it would be a great drama without any supernatural, any horror elements at all. It would just be really, really powerful. And I actually think, as dialogue heavy as it can be, I actually think that it could probably be done without any talking, and you'd still get it. I think you can watch The Witch on mute and still understand what's going on. The performances are that great, and it's just so, you know, it's such a small, contained kind of story. And it's not that complex, I don't think. I think it's, you get your head out of your ass and actually watch it. I think anybody could really get it, but you have to be, you got to be kind of ready for that.
Well, in the dialect, it makes you pay attention to the dialogue. Because it is a different dialogue, I think it makes the viewer have to pay attention because you're trying to figure out what they're saying. You know, for some people, it's a little difficult, but rather than having it in just plain, like we're talking similar to today, I think it makes people pay attention a little more, which I think a lot of films out there don't make an audience pay attention.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, it's not Shakespeare, but it's also not Trainspotting or Attack the Block either. I mean, it's in between. It falls in between there, and just maybe wasted on audiences that don't actually look up unless there's a loud noise.
Well, there's really no loud noise in here, but there is a whole hell of a lot of creepy stuff in this one. I asked you guys, why don't you bring up a topic along with you that you'd like to talk about on The Witch? I kind of did here with the dialect. So, Paul, did you have something in The Witch that you wanted to bring up?
I definitely do. The thing that I really noticed most about this film, other than most of the films that I've seen recently, it's the silence. There is a point in the movie toward the end where there was so much silence that I actually heard the Deadpool movie next door coming through the walls. And it was that silent. It was really a neat experience for me. And I was wondering what you two might have thought of that moment too. They have several moments of silence in there, but especially at the end, they have this one moment where her whole family is pretty much decimated, and she goes back into the barn and she collapses on the table, and then there's this point of silence, and it's just like, wow.
Yeah, I thought the movie was going to end right there, and it would have been fine with me if it did. I love the way it does end, but as part of the media, a lot of times I'll see movies in advance, and I'll either see them at home on a small screen or at the office on a small screen or at a preview screening, and I'm often by myself. So if I'm in the theater with someone, it's usually somebody that works at the theater just coming in to catch a little bit or something like that. But The Witch is a case where I wanted to see it, to be in there when other people were in there to see what they would do, you know? And people don't know what the hell to do with the silence. Mm-hmm. They have no idea what they're supposed to do during those parts. And It Follows was like that, too. They're like, what's going on here? There's no loud noise. There's no music. You know, and some people were just laughing because they had no idea what else to do. You know, and I think they misinterpret that as being boring or pretentious.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed the use of silence in here as well. It added that creepy, uncomfortable feeling because you know, this thing, first off, folks, if you're looking for your jump scare film, this isn't it either. Usually in a film, the modern horror films, you get the silence just before the jump scare, before the ha. But here we don't get a ha at all. We get that uncomfortable silence, and I liked it because I got the feeling that it gave the impression of the characters actually thinking, mm-hmm. that stuff was running through these characters' heads while that silence was going on, you know.
Yeah. And is it the movie's responsibility to entertain you all the time? Is it the movie's responsibility to live up to whatever it is you're expecting it to be? I don't think so. What do you guys think?
I agree with you, Andrew. It shouldn't have to. I look at art as being something that should be personal to me. I think the best art out there is the stuff where you have a different opinion than I do about the same thing. So we can watch the same movie, and if we came out with two different ideas about that movie, that's the perfect piece of art for me.
Yeah, exactly what an old person would say, Paul. I'm right there with
sorry.
You. I'm right there with you on that.
I don't like when a film, you know, lays it all out or whatever for you. You know, it breaks away maybe from those standard tropes that we've become so used to that we don't even realize are there. You know, this film, similar to the way Mad Max was for an action film, if you look at it, they shot everything and all the action was dead center in the camera. And if you realize that, you look at it going, oh, holy crap, it is. And in this one, lots of use of silence, but then there's the soundtrack, which was just the opposite. I mean, the soundtrack here was creepy, and at times that was the only emotion going on, wasn't it, Andrew?
Yeah. You know, it's leaving you to decide how you feel, you know, and you're doing a little more lifting than you have to do with your popcorn horror movie. And, you know, A24, I have a great relationship with them. I always say how great they are, and they deserve all the success that they've been getting. I think they're doing some hard work, doing similar work to what Miramax did in the 90s, but the 90s were a much different time culturally because you didn't have so much to... You had far more time back then to sit on something and really take it and absorb it. And now you kind of don't because everything's coming at you at a clip. It's just impossible. But they are putting arty films into tons of theaters for people. And I think that's very noble work, you know?
Yeah, I think so too. And I've been very happy with their work and some of the other films they've come out with.
Because you liked Room also, didn't you?
Yeah, I loved Room. While the story may have been a little bit something we saw before, Brie Larson just nailed that part mm-hmm. like in so well. And then, you know, this, and then I saw it was they did this one too, and I was like, oh, we're in for something a little different, at least, and we were. And I really dug this film and the soundtrack. How about you, Paul, with that soundtrack?
Yes, they had a heavy use of strings, which I think is always eerie, and it kind of harkens back to the old type of classical horror films. And then they had that weird, like, metal kind of piano wire sounding, you know, type of thing, and that always freaks me out, and I love films that can use that.
Yeah, the use of strings in here was really, really good, and it was a little throwing you off at times too, because nothing would be happening and that music would crescendo, and it throws you off a little bit, I think. So
sets your internal pacing off a lot, actually.
The sound design in this film was great. Like you said, Paul, the use of silence in here I thought was done really well. And the use of just small sounds, like when they're in the woods and the creaking of wood or you hear something just faintly, it just added, I think, to that atmosphere and made that woods its own character. Would you agree that Paul, that it was its own character almost?
The woods? Oh, yeah, definitely. Or the sound.
Well, both.
Both, but, yeah. But. Yeah, for sure. There's, it just has this eerie, eerie type of effect to it. And it's kind of weird. It's like, as we're talking about this movie, I feel like we're even kind of talking a little slower. It's just because we're so fixed on how that pacing of that film was, that even talking about it sets us in that pace. So that's a really good job, I think.
Yeah. Andrew, what about you? What was one of the things you wanted to bring up about the film?
Well, I had two things, and I'll leave the second one till if we end up having time, because
sure.
I related to it personally in a much more significant way than I expected to, and I'm comfortable with you guys enough to kind of share that. But mostly, I kind of wanted to talk about the influences on this movie, or possible influences, because I think like the newest film I would say it's informed by is The Shining. And probably the earliest is maybe Back to Haxan and The Virgin Spring by Bergman. And I wanted to know what other kind of stuff, because a lot of people are talking Polanski with it, and I can totally see that as far as, you know, like increasing paranoia in the tight space. But I didn't think so much Polanski when I was watching it as I did The Shining. And definitely the way the witches looked, the way and some of the imagery of Haxan, and then but Virgin Spring, maybe it had to do with the little house that they lived in, or maybe the time period, or maybe it was just, you know, another family drama thing. But I want to know what kind of, if anything jumped out at you guys about influences on the film, or possible influences on the film.
Paul, what about you? What influences did you think might have been in there on the witch?
While I was watching it, I was thinking The Shining, because I constantly saw the father figure as he's slowly throughout the movie kind of just self-destructing on his own thing. I mean, he kept chopping wood, and he was really good at chopping wood. Yeah. And that just kind of reminded me of the Shining, where, you know, he went back to his own kind of, you know, devices to try to cope with what was going on, and then suddenly it just, you know, he gave up.
Yeah, and for me it was The Shining, and maybe even a little bit of The Thing. Wow. It sounds weird, but The Thing, as far as the isolation, here you have a group of people pretty much isolated, and that paranoia, you know, of distrust, which we get, and it's even more so, I think, more dramatic in this one, because it's a family unit where that distrust is working its way in, and it's because of their, extreme faith of the parents that kind of adds to that paranoia. Especially, you know, here we get the impression, we learn from the parents, that they've kind of left a somewhat cushy life in England to come to America, and they're not quite happy. At least the wife isn't. And, you know, the family, the kids, like you had the oldest daughter, Thomason, you know, talking about, remember our house in England? And here they are in this one-room shack, and they're talking about windows, of having glass windows and that. And so just that feeling of isolation for them, that I felt that influence a little bit of The Thing, with the isolation and the paranoia going on in here. Now, I really liked the performance of Anya, who played Thomason in this. She, for a young actress, I thought she helped carry some of this film very well, because we're pretty much seeing it from her eyes, aren't we, Andrew?
Yeah, man, and she's, I tell you what, like, you think about these other movies that are like witch movies from that time, like definitely The Crucible and stuff like that. But even maybe like Stuart Gordon's Pit and the Pendulum, which is, you know, during the Crusades or whatever, I think. God, it's been forever since I saw that. But the beautiful woman, right, is accused of being a witch. But what I love about this particular one is that she is kind of like reaching adolescence or whatever, or teenage years or whatever, and the mom makes mention of her becoming a woman. And immediately I started thinking about Carrie.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
You know, because that seems to, like set off this conflict between mother and daughter, and the mother convinced that the daughter is evil, yada, yada, yada. And so that just to me, The Thing is a perfect comparison because who's the witch that you don't really know who's the evil one or whatever, and I didn't even think of that, but now that's all I can think about. but definitely, she just, that's that role, that's that kind of role to where, you know, everybody looks kind of dirty, but she looks like a supermodel, but it works, you know? Yeah. I don't think that was wrong for that. It totally works.
No, I think they did that on purpose. She was supposed to stand out and be different from the rest to begin with. You know, I think they picked her specifically because a bit of her looks on that, you know, because the rest of the family, you're right, everybody, now that you mentioned it, everybody was kind of dirty and you know, always seemed to need a shower, but her skin was usually pretty, you know, unblemished.
Well, yeah, like, you know, her little brother likes looking down her shirt and stuff, and the movie makes no illusions about him, like, not being able to figure out, you know, and the witch later uses that on Caleb, I think was his name, the
younger brother. Right.
But there's a couple times in the movie where he's totally trying to scope some of her boob.
We have actually one of the viewer that we have, Genma Rocks, was wondering how we felt about the twins, since you do bring up the children. And how did you feel, Paul, about the twins? Were they annoying? Were they creepy? Did you think they were effective?
Twins are always creepy in my mind.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and again, that brought back images of The Shining and so forth. But also, too, I really did think, and this is again how the film was so successful, in that I actually really did think that the kids were doing it, because I was thinking, oh my goodness, this is the Crucible. The kids are lying and they're all falling for it, and it, you know, and they flipped it on me again in that whole aspect.
Yeah, why I don't understand why more people didn't dig it, because it's so many of our classic horror movies really rolled into one like that, because now that, Paul, now you say that, it's freaking The Omen, Village of the Damned. Yeah. You know? Right in there, man. Yeah. What is people's problem, you know?
But yeah, you got your youth in here, and what I liked about that at first is that it's the signs are there, and that's where I thought the direction of that was handled really well with the twins, because I thought back about the film after it was revealed, oh, the goat's been talking to him, and I'm like, holy crap, that's been there the whole time. They've been playing with the goat. They've been really close to the goat. You know, and I thought they directed that well, because I think some other directors would have a scene where, you know, right away in the film where they seem to be talking to the goat, but they're kind of in the background for a while until Black Phillip escapes and he gets put in the pen, and then you're just like, oh, there's a black goat here, and then we see the kids kind of with the goat more often, and you're just like, okay, now. And then, I loved how they handled the twins in here. They were a bit annoying, but they're supposed to be, but they were still creepy, and I thought it was a surprise in a good way when it comes out, oh, yeah, you know, goat's been talking to us. And I'm like, wait, what?
Isn't that great, man? Black Phillip is metal as shit. You know, like, it's so metal. You know, like, every all these gory movies and all these hardcore people like to see, like, this, even though they say they hate Saw and they're a bunch of dumb movies, all they want to do is see more Saw movies where people are just, like, torn apart and the metal is going, like, that's their brutal, that's what they think real horror is. I'm sorry, man. Those two little kids and that goat, that's more hardcore than they will ever understand. Black freaking metal right there.
Black Phillip metal.
It totally is, man. He's metal as shit. That doesn't even have the double bass pedal.
Black Phillip was a great character. They did give characteristics, and there, Paul, it works back in with your use of silence, because you have the kids talking to Black Phillip, and we don't hear what Phillip is saying, but they're having a normal conversation. Talk about creepy.
They're actually even like at one moment, or one scene in the film, they're going, they're actually talking in goat, and you think at first they were just kind of mocking the goat, but now if you think about it, they're probably actually talking to the goat for real. You know, so bah, cool. Bah.
Yeah. That rabbit was scary.
Oh, my God, the eyes. Oh,
oh, the rabbit, too, the yeah.
The hair, yeah.
Eyes. Oh, God. I think people just don't want to admit that movie got to them. You know, I don't think they just – I think they just can't admit it. Everything's got to be a twist, you know.
Well, or a jump scare. I mean, people, you know, I get the impression, I'm not saying for sure, but I get the impression that a lot of people out there think in order for a film to scare you or be a good horror film, it should make you jump all the time. And in this case, no, this film just creeps you out continuously, and you're just like, oh my God, they did that, especially after they've established the homestead, and they do not shy away from it. They sacrifice a baby. There's no allusion to what has happened to the little baby.
Nope.
you know, and yeah, it just there was no allusion. I thought at first maybe I'm like, oh, okay, here we go, and then she's squishing the thing in the wooden stump. Paul, I know you don't like gore, but how'd you think the bloody parts in this film were used?
Actually, effectively, but this goes back to what Andrew was asking about other influences. You know, Silence of the Lambs, you know, the lotion on the skin. But also, too, the old classic Bathory, you know,
yeah.
Count Bathory, Countess Bathory. Yeah. So it just, you know, and she comes back young, and it, assuming that that's the same witch.
Oh, totally, man. Hot as shit, too, man.
Well, she
it on, you know.
She was played by a Victoria's Secret model.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but, it, well, and that's what was funny is I immediately, and I think if you follow any type of witch lore, you know right away what she's doing, why she took the baby, why she smushed it, and why she's rubbing it on her. You know, it's like, oh, we're doing a youth thing here. Okay. Our viewer also talked about how they thought the rabbit was the witch in the woods. Ooh. Was it the same witch or a different witch, do you guys think? Paul, I'll ask you first. Or do you think maybe she was looking through the rabbit's eyes?
I'm going to go with different witch in my opinion, because there were – just because at the end they revealed all the different types. And so to me, that was a different witch.
It did feel like there was a more of a coven in going on, even before the especially after the reveal at the ending, that we've got more than what one witch at work on this family. Would you agree on that, Andrew? Or?
In my heart of hearts, yes. I like to think that that place was full of witches, and they were doing all type of witchy shit. But I also like to think that there was no witchcraft, no supernatural.
Yeah.
Black Phillip was just a goat. The rabbit was just a rabbit. And this family just ate itself.
Yes. that's another angle to take on it, is that
yeah, like the baby probably just died and everybody, you know, flipped out and went crazy about it, you know.
So instead of that would make wow. Now you've just got me going on that, Paul. I mean, Andrew, because
I'm sorry, go ahead, man.
No, you're right, because imagine if you're looking at it back then and it's what 1630 or whatever, and you've got the young teenage girl who's coming of age, and so, you know, emotions and such, and she's playing peekaboo with the baby, and say the baby actually just died there. And then her brain freaks and saying, oh, the baby actually disappeared. And then that whole movie, part of it is them not coming to terms with the fact that the baby's dead.
yeah, she could have just, you know, it died, and she probably maybe buried it or something like that, or you know, whatever. But, like, you know, back in the old days, they made up stories to explain shit that they, you know, couldn't otherwise figure out, because, you know, kind of like with the Republicans, they don't, you know, believe in a lot of the advancements of technology and science. You know, they fire and electricity are cool, but once you get past that, things get a little dicey. I think that, you know, that's a way you could think about it. But no, in my heart of hearts, I want there to be monsters and ghosts and all that other stuff. So yeah, I agree. All those things were really witches. When I was watching it, yeah, I started to think, I was like, well, you know, kind of crazy. Like I said, that ending, you know, it's how fantastical it got with her rising up to the sky and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I was like, nah, she's laying there in that cabin with her head on the table, just having off her mom. Still there, you know.
Yeah, because the baby did get killed, right? I mean,
yeah, it did. And a lot of these stories, this movie was taken from like actual diaries and mm-hmm. folklore and other things like that. So you know, something like this could very well have happened.
Sure. Yeah, well, definitely. It's told like a folktale. Now that you mention it even further with the, you know, how this could be a retelling of some tragic event that happened to this family, a young baby just dying, and here this folktale comes out to explain what exactly happened to the family, say, written by a local villager.
Yeah, like you could have made The Revenant into a monster movie easily. Yeah. Instead, it was a bear. It was this evil spirit, you know, whatever. And then that Revenant could have been a horror movie instead. You know?
Oh, Revenant, yeah. You get just change a few things, and suddenly you get yourself a monster bear film.
Right, so that's what I'm saying with this. Take away the witch thing, kind of similar.
Now, for me, I kind of caught the theme a bit in this with having the young teenage, well, the daughter coming of age, because this is a bit of a coming of age story too. What struck me was when the mom was saying, seemed to feel threatened by her becoming a woman and wanting her out of the house because of, you know, the attention the dad was paying attention to her, and you know, she's suffering from the loss of her baby, and things kind of centered around her. I have heard of that happening in some families where, you know, when the daughter gets older, the older female of the house feels threatened. Did you guys get that feeling at all, that was coming across, Paul?
Yes, I actually went, as I was going through the movie, was trying to say, okay, this is going to be, or this starts to look like different aspects of the seven deadly sins. You know, you had envy, you had lust in Caleb, you had sloth in actual Thomason, she mentions that, and you know, you have wrath, and you have all these like sins, and I thought, wow, this is a beautiful movie to explain the different types of sin that are out there. And if you look at the movie in that kind of aspect, it's an unbelievable thing. And yes, the mother kind of envied what her daughter had, you know?
Yeah, now that you mention it, there's seven people, there's seven sins. We've got the seven deadly sins, Andrew.
Man, that's another brilliant Paul moment, dude. I'm just sitting here taking it all in, man. I just sit there and go, it's a movie about being freaked out about periods and vaginas.
Yes. You can take it that way, too.
Yeah, that's the things throughout history that continue to just scare the shit out of everyone. So
It would explain the blood, and yeah, there's a lot of imagery there that could go that direction. But yeah, now that Paul mentioned it with the seven deadly sins, the sloth, envy, greed, they touch on greed in here because of the silver cup, lust, with him looking down his sister's dress.
More than once, man. More than once. Yes. More than that witch when she appeared to him, man.
Oh,
she knew exactly what to do. She's like, hey, check out my busting out little, you know, Elvira gear that I got on here. And what was rad is, like, that kid, I gotta say, the kid that played Caleb, when he, right before he dies, when he comes back and has that crazy-ass moment after he coughs up that apple, that was just so cool what he did. Wasn't that some of the best acting in the movie at one point? That was the scariest scene to me for that kid, because, you know, your horror movie mind goes, okay, his head's going to spin around, his eyes are going to turn white, he's going to barf up blood or whatever, bugs are going to fly out of his ears. But it was just a person delivering a really terrifying moment, period.
I thought it was a great death scene, especially from a kid. I was like, wow. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he dropped, and then you had the twins affected as well. And it was just amazing, at that point, the paranoia that had struck this family, because, you know, all you had to say was, oh, it's her, and like half the people believe you. I mean, just like that. I mean, you really feel, even to the end, you feel sorry for Thomason, don't you, Andrew? I mean, you know, for what she's going through, you know, she seems like the innocent throughout it anyway, and yet they're painting her as the evil one.
Yeah, and that's the way it is, man, those movies where it's like, you know, person that they think did it, this might as well, that's just a death sentence right there, you know, every time. And you know, but it's the fear of youth. It's what we talked about earlier. But I've gravitated toward William as far as the sympathetic, mostly, as weird as that sounds. Because I saw a lot of my own family and my own dad in that guy, because like when I was in my late teens, my brother and I, my mom and dad, we moved from the city, from Atlanta, out into the boonies. And it was done because dad was sick of the city and sick of the people he was working for, and he wanted to start his own business. It was really headstrong, a lot like the way that William does, breaking from the town and everything. It's a matter of pride. And it sucked out there. It was freaking awful. It was culture shock. It was bad. Nothing, you know, the business went under, all of that stuff. So when William, the way he dies, getting gored by that goat is one thing. That was a scary moment, and I could tell the audience jumped. But the fucking wood that he has been splitting for the entire movie, every time he goes out there and takes out all his frustration, he's like, I'm going to break this wood because it's the only thing that I have any power over. The only control I have is over this wood. I can break it, and I can stack it. You see how much fucking wood he did. It's going up the side of the house, and it all comes down on him and buries him. If there is no greater metaphor in The Witch, it's that right there. And that hit me like I had been hit by all those wood blocks. I was like, oh my god, it's my dad. And you know, when people come out of these movies, they want to go, oh man, remember that part where the ghost did this, or oh man, when that guy's head exploded, oh man, or remember that part when salt and pepper kicked in, right, just like in the commercial we saw 900 times, they still did it in the movie. They weren't talking about that. People don't want to come out of a movie and go, oh god, man, remember that part? That reminded me of my family, man, something my uncle did to me when I was 5, man, high five Trump.
Sorry.
You know what I mean?
I know what you're saying, though. Exactly. It's again, this is another film that you think, and it strikes a chord within you, and suddenly your brain starts working on, you know, this isn't just a scene of the goat. Well, not only that, not only does the goat gore him, but he looks like he's going to fight it at first, and then he just accepts Black Phillip hitting him. Which, yeah. I thought was even more eerie than, you know, I mean, Black Phillip was like you said, metal. He was a freaking creepy character.
He was doing
character.
Him a favor, man.
But he, it's like that moment he gave up. It was like, I'm not even going to fight. I saw my, you know, these goats were slaughtered, my daughter's screaming, the twins. We don't know what happened to the twins. They must have died. We don't actually know what happened to the twins. But he's just like, yeah, that's it. I'm done. Just gore me again. And then he gets buried, like you said, by all that wood.
You don't really know, man, how much wood until they get that wide shot of that house. I'm still thinking about it. And that all that shit just came down, and you're just like, because, you know, the baby being gone could signify the loss of innocence or whatever. That could have been a metaphor about the, you know, serving what we talked about with the daughter and all that stuff. There's a lot of things that were, you know, very smart, very high-minded, much more so than, you know, The Visit, even though I liked it for its own reasons, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But, like, God, that wood pile, man. You're just like, remember Man in the Box, Alice in Chains, I'm buried in my shit? There he goes.
Well, and then you get, you know, you have the mother in there who is distraught over the loss of her one baby, and she, like, just shuts down. Again, you get that impression, like, she didn't want to be out there to begin with, you know, and William had to deal with that on top of a baby missing, on top of, you know, his daughter coming of age, the twins acting weird, and his son Caleb seeming reluctant to be a man. So to speak. Yeah, I felt bad for William the most. He felt like he was just completely lost. He was losing his faith, which was, he starts off with a strong man in his faith, and now he's had a series of events that has made him question it. And that's what I think part of that wood chopping, like you said, Andrew, is the thing that he controls, but he also knows that's real and that's what he believes in, and he knows he can chop that wood.
Yeah, well, they're in over their heads, man. You know, they're coming from England. That was, that was like, you know, the farming and stuff like that, any, you know, the land that you would go to or whatever, they, where they settled, that had been, you know, it was a sure thing. Like, they had been farmed for years and years and years. But in America, man, it was hit and miss where you're going to end up with it. Yeah, there's tons of stories of people just, hey, here's a cool place we can live. No, it's not cool. We all died.
Yeah. <know?
laughs> And babies dying, that was like all the time. Little kids dying, babies dying. I was like, people were so hardcore back
then. Well, but and that way the witch became their, no pun intended, scapegoat
totally
for every other bad thing that happened on their plantation. I mean, if you look at where they set up their farm, not the best place to grow corn.
No.
And they're wondering why their corn is rotting. If you look, they kind of built it near a swampy land.
Yeah.
you know, he didn't know what he was doing, and he was too proud, like, you know, that sin of pride to admit it, I think.
Yeah.
You know, but he was. He lost complete control, and they blamed it on the witch. You know? And the witch, all she did was steal their baby and do a youth potion, you know?
Yeah, no, you got to, back then, man, people would be like, oh, I got a boner from looking at my sister. It's the devil.
Yep.
It's like, no, it's just your boner. Sorry.
Well, everything was, they started blaming a lot of things on the witch. I mean, it's just like, no, that's not it, you know.
Thanks, Obama.
Thanks. And like, you know, it's wild, all the things going on in this film. And then coming back to the Black Phillip character, who knows if he was actually, well, he was, I guess at the end we got that he was kind of tied to the witch coven, but for me, that scene where Paul was mentioning where she talks in her silence, man, I almost thought he wasn't going to talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here her entire family's been just annihilated, gone, dead, whatever. And so she's given up and she's given in. She is not turning to her faith. She's talking to the black goat saying, hey, what can you do for me?
Yeah.
And I thought they were going to have it end where the goat didn't say anything and she just walked away. But then he spoke. Andrew, was that creepy?
That was so metal. You gotta remember, when you listen back to this, listener of Mark's show, a movie called Risen opened the same weekend as The Witch in Wyatt in America. And that is what they call a faith-based movie, which basically means it's a movie for the Christians of the nation. A lot of these movies are out now. And so for the devil to be real in the story, I'm not a religious person, but that was really awesome. You know, it felt like a little bit of counter-programming. Obviously, The Witch is going to outlast those movies. Those movies are now the new exploitation as far as I'm concerned. But The Witch, when Satan was talking, I was like, you know, I just wanted to make the metal sign like Ozzy just came out in his demon chair. So happy about that. That's what you want, man. Don't pussy out. You know, it's like I got all the respect for Shyamalan, the way he can say, oh, you thought it was this? Well, it was actually this. And, you know, so many of these movies are about, oh, you know, everybody was, you know, this was what was really going on. Even back to, like, House on Haunted Hill or whatever. So it was nice that the movie stayed committed to its thing. It's like, the devil's real as shit, everybody. Beautiful.
Yeah, I did not expect him to actually reveal it. Did you, Paul?
I did, actually, because...
Oh, did you?
And this is the reasoning. I've noticed that most people actually did become the thing that everyone expected them to be. And that was a message in the film, in my opinion, was that be careful of what you try to be or who you try to present yourself to be, because everyone ends up becoming that. And so the goat became the devil because everyone believed it to be the devil. And in the very, very end, Thomason becomes a witch because everyone expected her to be that witch.
She fought it and then she finally gave in. And yeah, because everybody kept bugging her, hey, that's what you're going to be, that's what you're going to be. And finally, all her family members die, and she goes, okay, so that's what I'm going to be.
Yeah, the mom acted so put upon and, you know, all the time, so she got to be the martyr, you know. Yeah. Made me think about that scene in The Ref. You know what I'm going to get you for Christmas next year, Mom? A giant wooden cross. Next time you're feeling unappreciated, you could just climb up and nail yourself.
Oh, the rough, yeah. But yeah, for me, I loved how they portrayed the devil because we didn't get horns, we didn't get anything. It stayed out of focus, though he does wear spurs.
I wish they would have just stayed with the voice.
I'm not sure why they had to give him spurs. I'm like, wait, he's a cowboy?
It's a little classical Satan. I mean,
yeah.
If you're going to show Satan, you know, because I think maybe there might have been a little confusion about the animal talking. Mm-hmm. It might have been a little too much for some people. People might have started laughing. And for people that might say they don't believe in the devil but really do, you know, showing him is, I think, was important. But yeah, I would have liked if it was just the, you know, blank. Because, again, metal is shit.
Well, I liked it, though, at least because they didn't show it completely, you know, show him completely, though. We got an out of focus kind of a foot, and then he barely peeks out from behind her, which is just a creepy thing. I love when horror films do that. That creeps me out more than any jump scare is when they...
Well, I'm sorry, Mark. Wouldn't it have been cooler if he would have just been some big CGI thing like Mama or whatever?
Oh. yeah, sure.
If you say a mechanical shark.
A mechanical shark. There you go. I was glad. It was great to see that they did make it supernatural, you know, but at the same time, Andrew, you bring up a good point too, where did the stuff that happened, was it manifested because of their paranoia and their losing of faith and everything, or was it the cause of it? And I think that's a big question is, you know, was Black Phillip originally the devil, or did the devil come through Black Phillip because of what was going on with the family?
It's a good thing, man. See, the fact that we're even talking about this for so long, the fact that you're asking questions like that, means that somebody made a damn movie that was meant to be enjoyed on a more than a surface level for longer than just, you know, 2 hours, and for maybe more than just this year or next year, you know, because the where we are with horror, it's going to pass. Mm-hmm. It's going to be seen. Found footage and remakes are going to be seen as just as corny as some of the slasher and all this other stuff. They're going to be. History is going to show. Film history is going to show that they were trends, and people are going to be like, "Hey, Dad, did you go see The Witch?" Like, no, I went on the internet and said it looked stupid. No, they're going to say they saw it and that they loved it. We all knew it was going to be a classic. That movie was huge.
It's a film that deserves more attention and study, and I can see at least that the critics are, you know, thoroughly enjoying it, but I do know a number of viewers out there who didn't seem to get it, and that's what I said my Twitter response after I left was, it was worth the half-hour drive to go see it, but I don't think your modern audience, many of them, may get what's actually going on in this film. You know, the fact that you're being presented with this, and it's kind of up to you how things actually are, you know, interpreted or what you're supposed to get out of it versus it telling you this is what you're going to get out of this film.
Yeah. The classics are usually, you know, either poorly reviewed or poorly received. They're either bombs or they're, you know, ripped apart, misunderstood. Mm-hmm. That's just the way history has shown the best movies are usually.
And mentioning classics, it really had the feel of a Hammer horror film. European, you know, type horror in that it's not that, you know, basic narrative. There's a lot of stuff bubbling underneath this film. And I think we're going to wrap it up for the night because we could talk even more about The Witch. You know, this shows you that this film really, I'm hoping, and just a side note, it was made for $1 million. Estimated $1 million total. That's all this wide release horror film was made, and I think it made a more impactful story than your, you know, multi-$1 million Conjuring 2, which I saw a trailer for, you know, beforehand, which was all glossy and colorful, and this man was all washed out and more creepy than I would say many modern horror films. So we'll just go down real quick. Andrew, why don't you give your final thought or summary on The Witch, and if people are kind of on the fence to see it, what you would say to them?
Well, what you got to remember is if The Shining came out next weekend, if Texas Chainsaw Massacre came out next weekend, critics would probably react the way they did back in the day. Most of them would probably really love it. In fact, probably more now so now than they used to. But the audiences, who unfortunately now have a voice that a lot of people mistakenly listen to and make their decisions on, would think that The Shining was a boring, pretentious piece of crap, and that Texas Chainsaw Massacre was a cheap-looking piece of junk, and that both were overhyped and not scary. And what you got to remember is, you know, people don't know. Make up your own mind. What I think is great about what A24 is doing with The Witch is that they are putting this movie out to a lot of people. And for every, you know, 10 or 20, 30 in that room that are going to see it and hate it, there's going to be somebody in that room that's going to see it and go like, I loved this. I might someday make an awesome movie like this. That is what keeps good horror going.
Excellent. And Paul, your final thoughts, and what would you say to someone who maybe was on the fence to see this film?
I would say that if you like the creepypasta memes that are out there, you'll like this movie.
That's a good way to put it. And yeah, I would say too, go see it with no expectation. Just take it in. It's an experience. It's an atmospheric film. It's a film that you need to pay attention to and think. And at the end, when the credits roll, you will still be thinking about it. And you will be thinking about it on the way home. If you just give it a chance and sit there and pay a little attention to it, I think you'll find a really great movie here that is going to probably be talked about like we did tonight for many years to come. I just want to throw a shout-out real quick to our continuous viewer tonight, Jenma Rocks, who's been commenting as well. We appreciate you watching us talk about The Witch. And now, as always, as we wrap up, here's a quick pimp your stuff. Andrew, go ahead. Where can we find you at when you're not here?
Oh, hi, everybody. Thanks for listening. I make movies under Gonzorific Films, GONZORIFFIC. We have a YouTube channel. It's got a lot of free short films on it. If you like Ed Wood or Russ Meyer or John Waters or any of those cheap, wonderful, low-budget movie people, we have, like, you know, sexy, funny, low-budget stuff on there for free. We also have some stuff on Amazon on demand. Of Fake Blood, Mondo Gonzo, Pajama Nightmare, and the Underground Cinema, Cinema with an S. And if you're in Charleston, South Carolina, for the Crimson Screen Horror Film Festival in May, our movie The Gash is going to be shown there. And it's about naked women in period blood.
I love how you put that.
It's the truth. I can't sugarcoat it.
And Paul, go ahead. Where can we find you at?
So Andrew makes period pieces. I never knew that.
Totally. More than one, buddy. More than one. I'm a decade at least deep. More than that now.
Sweet. But you can find me at WordPress, Twitter, and Facebook at Forsaken Film Reviews. And if you'd like to learn more about our upcoming horror film festival, you can check us out at www.newhorrorfest.com.
Fantastic. Yes, check that out. A new horror fest coming out, aptly named New. So look that up and stay tuned for more updates about that interesting horror film festival that is on the horizon. And if you want to find my stuff, specialmarkproductions.com is where you can go to find my latest of just about everything, including episodes here of The Spoiler Room, our archives there, as well as links to my other stuff, as well as links to these fine folks and our other crew members who are here with us in spirit. We appreciate you listening in tonight as we talk about The Witch. I hope you got some information, got a little flavor for it, and go out and see it for yourself. And then come back and comment, and make sure when you're commenting, go to iTunes and comment and rate us as well. It gets us notice. Subscribe if you can to the RSS feed. We appreciate everyone, including our one viewer tonight, for your continued support for The Spoiler Room, where the conversation is fresh, but we do spoil the movies.